We're on the telephone with Brad Lubin, who is an extension policy specialist at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Brad, wanted to visit with you about the Farm Bill. Now, of course, both houses have passed their version of the Farm Bill, and they're going to be going to a conference committee here, we would imagine, fairly soon. Let's talk about some of the issues that they're going to have to resolve. And the big one appears to be what the House wants to do with the SNAP program as far as work requirements, which are not part of the Senate bill.
Right, right. For all the differences in the bill, in every title, the big one certainly is the nutrition title and the SNAP differences. The House proposed some rather substantial reforms to tighten up eligibility rules, to tighten up some of the benefit calculations, and to enforce the work requirements, along with a trade-off of increased investment in education and job training to presumably help individuals move off of SNAP benefits over time. The Senate does not push any of those more stringent requirements in its version, and that will certainly be the biggest challenge here to find a compromise in conference.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting because the leading Democrats on both sides, Colin Peterson and Debbie Stabenow, appear to be very opposed to any of those changes in the House version. And Pat Roberts doesn't seem to be too thrilled about it either. But then you've got the Trump administration pressing for them.
Well, and it's worth remembering that the SNAP program has work requirements in it. But those work requirements also have been sort of managed or avoided in many states that have secured waivers of those requirements, basically to extend the amount of time that a recipient can be on SNAP benefits without pursuing or getting kicked off for lack of finding a job. So there are work requirements in the SNAP program, but the big issue is that they've been waived. And at times they were waived given the economic recession and the high joblessness rate or the high unemployment rate. But even as the economy, the general economy has recovered, and even as the unemployment rate has reached substantial lows, and we've seen economic recovery, we still see fairly substantial enrollment participation in SNAP. So the fact that there's a focus now on tightening the work requirements is, you know, alternatively seen as trying to restore order or trying to impose substantial cuts that will hurt lots of recipients of SNAP.
Do you expect a compromise on this?
It's difficult to imagine exactly what is to come out of this in a compromise. If you're going to impose tighter work requirements, how much tighter do you go? The Senate version does not substantially strengthen those. Now, Chairman Roberts was remiss in saying we didn't explain our reforms in the SNAP program well enough. So it's advertised as the Senate version is very much a compromise version that doesn't make major changes to SNAP. Well, they do tighten up some rules in there and improve the administration and the reduce fraud and waste and so forth. So the Senate does make efforts to help reform and revise the SNAP program as well, but certainly not the scale that the House proposes. But how do you find common ground between the House and Senate version? It may come down to who's on the conference committee and what position do they fundamentally stand on. If you've got the Senate conferees standing for a compromise version that can achieve Democratic votes enough to get up to 60 to get a bill across the finish line, if you have a House set of conferees that are they fundamentally more devoted to trying to institute SNAP reforms, or are they fundamentally more focused on trying to get a farm bill across the finish line? That could well dictate what kind of compromise we get in a final SNAP program.
And remind us again, now once they reach the compromise, then each House will have to approve the compromise, right?
Of course, yes. We'll get back to technically the House has to first vote down the Senate version. If the House would vote for the Senate version, then we wouldn't need a conference committee, but we're certain that wouldn't happen. So technically the House would vote down the Senate version. then it would vote to appoint conferees, and we go through conference committee, and then we eventually get a compromised version coming out of conference committee that could happen in August, certainly, if they work in a timely fashion and can move through those issues. But then it's subject to a final vote in both the House and the Senate to get across the finish line here and to get on Pennsylvania Avenue down to the White House.
And the way things are in Congress right now, that could be a rough road there.
Yes, even if the conference committee is able to find compromise and produce a report to be considered in both chambers, you still have to find time to hold that vote in both the House and the Senate before the attention really turns to the final weeks of the campaign before the fall election. So there's some school of thought that says they rush to get this done, or at least they do it in a timely fashion and they get it done, and you have an accomplishment here in this Congress that can be touted on the campaign trail, at least in key districts across the country. Or you push it and you negotiate it, but you can't come to a final vote until after the election. And that presumes that a lame duck session of Congress is interested in wrapping this up and not dragging it on into the new year. So there are a couple of options that point towards passage yet this year. The very optimistic one says it can get done before the election. A little more reflection maybe says the challenge is to make sure that it at least gets done this calendar year.
And that would, if it's pushed back to the lame duck session, that would require an extension of the current bill.
Technically, it would require an extension of the current legislation to keep programs operating. For commodities, the big deadline isn't really September 30th, it's December 31st, when you have the old permanent legislation from 1849 that kicks in if you don't have a new bill in place, and that kicks in on January 1st for dairy. So there's the technical deadline on September 30th, and certain programs would lose their authority already on October 1st, and certain commodity programs wouldn't fundamentally change until no earlier than January 1st. So yes, they really do need to extend something if they don't get a bill done in September, but they could extend current legislation for just a matter of weeks in order to have enough time to wrap up the final bill.
What about this payment limitations issue? And that becomes kind of a North versus South issue, the way it sounds. And the House bill, as I understand it, actually loosens the limitations. And of course, Senator Grassley from Iowa is pushing his limitations on the Senate side.
Right. You do have a tale of sort of two regions, or at least two directions here. Remembering that we have this current sort of framework of payment rules and limitations. We have program payment limits per person. We have adjusted gross income caps to be eligible for payments per person. We have active engagement rules, which says an individual has to be actively engaged in the operation to be eligible for payments. And that's active engagement in both an ownership and in terms of land, labor, capital, et cetera, land, machinery, and capital, as well as a participation in terms of labor and management. So, and then we also have what's called direct attribution, which says it's not entities that receive payments, it's individuals in entities that receive payments. Now, the House has been advertised as loosening the payment rules. They have expanded the number of entities that sort of don't count for purposes of payment limit rules. As it currently stands, individuals face a limit and entities face a limit when they are not pass-through entities. So a Chapter C corporation, for example, faces a single limit regardless of how many people are in that entity. A Chapter S corporation is amongst those that the rules would loosen here. Chapter S's are built for effectively pass-through purposes, corporate structure, but activity passes through to the individuals in the corporation. So this advertising is loosening those entity rules, but it's still fundamentally tracing payments to individuals. So I think the argument may be a little bit overblown there. The other rule that the House passes would expand the definition of family that is exempt from some of the participation rules. So that includes cousins and nieces and nephews, where it historically was more immediate family. That does expand some of the eligibility. So the House does sort of loosen the rules in general. The Senate, on the other hand, proposed tightening those rules. Within the committee bill itself was a proposal or was language to tighten the adjusted gross income cap from $900,000 to $700,000. And then Senator Grassley was pushing for an amendment that did not get heard in committee but did get added to the bill as it was amended going to the floor, and that would tighten the active engagement test and sort of tighten the participation rules for management. That could substantially restrict sort of the number of extended family members that can sort of truly contribute to an operation and be eligible for payments. So it is a test of lesser restrictions versus more restrictions. I don't know. Maybe it's a function of who ends up on conference as to where those rules ultimately end up.
It sounds like one of those where the compromise may be just leaving it where it's been.
It could be possible when you've got bargaining positions on either side of the status quo that maybe the status quo ends up being the compromise. But that remains to be seen.